Good evening and welcome to Shattered Lives, everyone. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, and we at Shattered Lives are so excited to welcome you to this unique show, taking you beyond the details of the crime and the perpetrator and getting to the heart of what crime victim families experience and what they need in the aftermath of the crime. Prior to the show, please go to www.donnagore.com or imaginepublicity.com to read the background of the case or the organization featured the week before our show is aired. And please don't forget, in case you can't listen from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, you can listen at any time using our archival feature at Blog Talk Radio. You look for the big red heart with the cracks. And after that, in about 24 hours, we have a blog and a podcast available. So with that, I say welcome again, everyone. This is Donna, Lady Justice, welcoming you to another episode of Shattered Lives. And I'm so happy to be introducing my show this evening, the beginning of October. And in case you don't know, this is the beginning of Domestic Violence Awareness or Domestic Violence Action Month. And we have a whole lineup of activity events and festivities planned because it is a very important month to many people from all across the nation, actually, but particularly people from Imagine Publicity. And we all know that that is the company that I am affiliated with, and my co-host, Delilah Jones, president of Imagine Publicity, who'll be joining me in just a second. And I just want to say that Imagine Publicity is one of the bright stars in the constellation, just an amazing company with amazing professionals. So please do check it out. And with that, I welcome her on board, Delilah. Thanks for being here, and thanks for being my co-host and my guest this evening.
Hi, Donna. Good to be here, as always.
Yes, well, thank you. And I think we may be treated to a special guest, but I'm not entirely sure. If we do have a special guest, that will be great. If not, tonight we are devoting the hour to a very, very special publication, Susan Murphy Milano's Holding My Hand Through Hell, which is her memoir, her autobiography. And I have to say that I got an advance copy about a year ago, and she has made some revisions to it, and it has just come out for publication. And in case people do not know, the publisher, Ice Cube Press, it is available through them primarily, as well as Amazon, but we encourage people to get it through Ice Cube Press because they are graciously offering 10% of the proceeds to go toward Susan's medical expenses, which continue to mount, and every little bit helps, as we say. And so we want to thank the publishers for that. And so I think tonight we're going to be examining exactly how this book came to be and some more of the details of what the book holds in terms of content, general area. And so I think, Delilah, I don't know, prior to us starting with a description of the book or the backstory, is there any introductory remarks you'd like to make?
Well, I was not prepared for that, but I think one thing the public needs to know about this book, everyone needs to know about this book. This is something that's totally different. It's kind of, it's a memoir, autobiography. It's a true crime book. It's so many things all rolled into one. It's not, you know, so many survivors of domestic violence tend to want to do something to get their story out there. And a long time ago, Susan and I decided we really didn't like the word story, because it wasn't a story, it was reality. This is what people who went through this, lived through, this is their reality, not a story.
Right.
So I don't even want to refer to holding my hand through hell as a story, because it's so, so much more than that. It takes the readers for a ride from the very beginning. It starts out very quickly, and it keeps you going all the way to the end, wondering just, you know, what's going to happen next. It's really a sit-on-the-edge-of-your-seat page-turner book in that respect.
It's absolutely captivating and very
And most autobiographies don't come across that way, or memoirs come across that way, or even a lot of true crime books don't come across that way. So, you know, in a lot of the reviews that we've gotten, and a lot of very well, authors have read the book, and the feedback that we got was just phenomenal. And I we were both so, so happy here that it was so well received. And really, Susan was kind of shocked, kind of like, really?
Well, I'm not, knowing her talents as an author, too, I think people don't realize that. She does have a lot of talent as an author, and it really shows through. And perhaps later in the month, when my second blog about it comes out, you'll just see I took a lot of time in trying to create sort of the landscape that it covered, as well as my personal feelings, and to try to paint a picture that this was just not some usual memoir, as you just said, Delilah. It really takes you to a whole different level, and it tells a person's life. It is not a story of fiction. It is truth, and there's so many lessons here to be learned, and it's not just about the intimate partner violence. It's about her entire life and the challenges that she continued to have even beyond her mother's murder and her father's suicide. And they just kept mounting and mounting, and she just kept facing them and dealing with them. And that...
Well, you know, one of the premises of your show is, you know, examining the effects of those who've survived violent crime and how did it impact their lives. And,
right.
You know, of course, holding my hand through hell is going to tell the story of not so much the crimes itself, but how it impacted the life of one woman. And, you know, it's one thing to write a book, but it's one thing to live every single page of it and be able to tell it in the way that it's been told. And, you know, one thing I really want the audience and readers, future readers, to know is that there is an impact to a life like this. There is. And one of the things that has impacted not just Susan, but myself, her friends, her family, everyone that knows her, is the fact that she is suffering from stage 4 cancer.
Right.
And this, to be able to present a book without the author is a little bit difficult, and on many different levels, it's very difficult. This is something that was 3 years in the making. This is a book that it was very, very difficult for her to write. And there were there's so much truth in the book that she had to face, so many things that you relive and telling, you know, exactly what happened. And it causes a lot of stress in the mind, and it causes a lot of stress in the body. And this is one of the impacts of a life, I think, where she took every risk that so many people were afraid to take. And if there's one thing that I've learned from, you know, the years that I've known her, is, you know, you just step out there and you take it. You take that risk. You don't hold back. Go full bore, because you're only going to go around once.
Right.
Enjoy.
And it seems to me that all of these risks that she has taken has has been very selfless, and it hasn't been for her. A lot of it has been in the name of her mother, but it's always been for the greater good. She took this risk to do this book, to do the other books, to save women and men's lives who were in danger. She created her own nonprofit organizations to help other people. She was a force in the court system in Chicago.
Why don't we just let her tell us what it is she wants the audience to hear. Are you there, Susan? Go ahead.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for having me on.
Hey, Susan. Thanks for joining us. It's great to have you.
From my hospital bed in beautiful Myrtle Beach.
Yes, indeed. So I'd love to hear your thoughts. Tell us what you'd like to share.
I think that the book is so that people have a better understanding of, you know, I'm kind of tired of reading about the neighbor who said, I didn't see anything, I didn't hear anything, that's possible, or the teacher who said, you know, I don't know if that really went on. It's about, we have to hold, at some level, accountability lives. We have to be able to say people's lives matter. It's not the trauma, it's not the bloodshed, it's about how you come out of it, because when you grow up in a violent home, kids across the country, I always said that the Drew Peterson kids, especially the younger ones, the boy and the girl of Stacy's, and Stacy's still missing since October 2007, that they'll never know hope. That's a word they won't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to be their guidepost. Hope
right.
for me was about my mother being there, keeping her alive, the hope to the next day. So that was shattered when she died.
Right.
And families make the mistake when they bring in the kids and as their confidants, or the kids are part of the armor, if you will, to stay alive. This book is different in that whether I'm here or not, the words are powerful enough, the lessons are important enough, the discussion, the debate can be had for people by word of mouth to the churches, to get this book out, to get this book out there so that they understand from actually probably 10 different views, beginning with a child, what really happened, because you can't make any more excuses and say, I don't know. And I didn't really look at my life that much until I started writing this book, and it was very painful.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, I had to look at myself in the mirror. I lost everything, my country, my home, when they died, and I had to relearn, rethink. I lost, what one person can do is how they wreak havoc. Mark Klass from the Klass Foundation always said, if he gives in, he lets the killer of his daughter win. If I gave in, I'd let the killer of all of our spirits and my mother's life win. I couldn't allow that. He had won while he was alive. I was going to make sure that in his death, that wasn't going to happen. And that people could live. And that I learned so much from being in such a household that was a battleground, a war field, that it served a purpose to keep others alive where they wouldn't have before. And it's about God. And this is kind of ironic. Just before, June 23rd, we get hit with the diagnosis and everything. Officially, you know, all this stuff comes down. And I have all these projects ready to go with the Peterson trial and Forbes and a big book series with Steve Jackson, a television series, all these things, and it just pulled out from under me because I can't do it. And do I get upset? No, because there's nothing I can do about it. This is in God's timing. It's not in mine. And that's what people have to understand. No matter what, you can come through on the other side. Yeah, you're going to have scars. Yeah, it's not going to be easy. Yeah, it's tough, especially when you're by yourself. But in these last couple of years, I have never felt so loved, so part of a community, a family. You know, I don't know who does this in this country, but Delilah's taking care of me since I came off that plane in Missouri. So that's been since the end of April. Or, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know.
24/7 mm-hmm. between her sister and other people, not wavering and making sure I need whatever I need, even though I ask, well, where's the money coming from for this or that? Don't worry about it. We'll be fine. You know, it's about getting me healthy, getting me strong. I've never done anything like that for me, only always for everybody else. So this, if ever I had said uncle to God, it was this.
Mm-hmm.
And if people could really understand that if they want to, you know, you can accept your life all you want.
If, well, you know, before you hang up, I want to put you on the spot if you want to be. If you don't, then that's fine too. But this is a time when your words are preserved. And many radio shows that you and I did together with victims gave them the opportunity to say what they wanted to whomever they wanted, to preserve those words.
Mm-hmm.
You have a chance. Do you want to take it or you don't have to?
You know, if my son was ever to listen to this, I wish him love and light, and I hope that he understands the truth and not what's been clouded, and I hope he reads the book, and I hope that and my kid sister, same thing, because I raised her, and so much bitterness, so much angst over what? Territory, control, power over nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That I didn't choose this work. It chose me. If I can make a difference in this way, yeah, it wasn't easy. Yeah, I had to eat a lot of crow sometimes. But I never looked at anything other than what was in front of me, which was the women and the kids. I never expected to do as much as I've been able to do for these families. And now with the evidentiary of use affidavit, that's all God. That's all higher than myself. That's all of these things came into play like a beautiful, beautiful symphony. Will I be somewhere else watching this symphony? Yeah, probably. And maybe making different sheet music? Probably. And knowing some people if I can? Probably. But... I don't want people to, they had time while I was here to come to me, to not be so pigheaded. Saying I'm sorry isn't that hard. And they didn't, or they weren't big enough to reach out, and they walked away because it was easier to put their head in the sand. And to me, they turned out to be cowards who said that no matter what, that they would be there, no matter what, at whatever distance or height or whatever it took, that they would be there. And that hurt.
Well, you know, Susan, I firmly believe that those people that are in your world now are the people that are meant to be there, and they are your true family.
What, Donna, do you remember when you and I talked about this before? When, you know, our relative, our father, mother died and stuff, and we said, everybody turned away, like we had the plague.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm learning now in this, with what I have, to, for certain people, they have turned away, like I have the plague, all over again, like my mother died. instead of embracing this. To me, all this is I have a massive infection that has consumed my body that doesn't look like it's going to go away, and it's going to take me, and that's okay. Because what God does is God prepares us always for here and there. So I'm seeing, you know, I always kept saying, if you're such a good person, God doesn't allow this stuff to happen. But now I'm seeing in being brought to my knees that that's not true. Everything has a reason. Everything has a purpose. So while it's easier to slip on a banana peel and go unconscious, that's the easy way out.
Mm-hmm.
God
does this
says,
feel like a second victimization, Susan?
No. God says, when is your time? And no, I don't feel like that at all. I never felt like a first victimization.
Well, and what's one thing we've you and I have said to each other all the, you know, the past few years going through this book and all the things we've been doing, it's all in the timing, right?
Well, I learned a lot about myself, my mom,
exactly.
My relationship with men, which, you know, I wouldn't write home about, but I've had a heck of a life. I have led on a shoestring. I have led a life and made a life that has held accountable while at the same time going into uncharted territory by accident and winding up places that wound up saving people's lives.
And that's
the amazing thing. If you go with pure heart and pure intent in everything that you do, then that's what makes it different. So for this book, girls who have been sexually assaulted by perhaps a relative, or many of them have read it, like I had sent it to them beforehand, or people that were in crisis. Because I always get this, you don't know what I've been through, you have no understanding, and I don't like that, so I don't answer them, I just respond by showing them. But that's
well, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
One thing I'd like to do before you hang up, because I know you're tired, but
right.
One thing that, do you remember the show that we did on Blood Talk Radio? And every show, we ended with something very special to me. I don't know if I can do it.
Can you do it?
Don't be.
Go ahead.
The last key in the bunch that opens the door. Nobody trips over mountains. It's a small pebble that causes you to stumble. But we back all the pebbles in your path, and you'll find you've crossed the mountain. And you are on the mountain right now.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And we love you, Delilah, and we love you, Susan.
I love both of you and your audience. You know, if you tell people about the book, if you get it into the churches, if you give it away as a gift, it gives people hope. We don't have a lot of hope out there.
That's what we need to do. We need to spread that message of hope. It's not just about violence, and that's a very important point. Very important.
That isn't something that you would expect of me to pen. I appreciate you both, and God bless you, and I hope that your listeners go out and spread the word about Holding My Hand Through Hell. And it is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and the publisher is donating 10% of any book sold this month to my medical costs, which are exorbitant.
Mm-hmm. And that's wonderful and generous.
It
and
is.
Yes. And so why don't you go rest, and we will talk to you very soon, okay?
Thank you both.
Okay, thank
all
you, Susan. Love you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Okay.
Riley, are you there?
I'm here, yeah. I didn't mean to lose it, but every time I read that passage, I lose it. Even when I was forced to do it 2 years ago, not forced, I shouldn't say it that way, but every time if I was co-hosting and had to end the show, every time I read that, I just lose it. But it's so meaningful to me.
It is. It speaks volumes about, you know, what her path has been, what she has accomplished. And again, I think there's example after example. So many times it not only brought me to tears reading this book, but I was in awe of her ability to persevere, to bounce back, to always talk about thinking out of the box as a means of survival. And, you know, no matter what you face, I mean, yes, I've had other experiences where people have used those descriptive terms about my life, and it is true, but in a very different way. So we have those commonalities and we have those bonds. But again, this is just a very, very unique book, and I think that, you know, we should stress again that it is about hope, and it says a real life journey right there on the cover, right under her.
Well, I think, you know, absolutely, that's definitely a description. It is a real life journey of someone who took a lot of risks, made a lot of mistakes, had made a lot of failures, failed at a lot of things. But generally speaking, when knowing Susan the way I do, when she failed herself, it was someone else's benefit. It was someone else who was helped by that failing. And she was willing to take it, as she still is today. And this is the way the woman operates. It's very, very self-sacrificing in the sense that she means what she says. She does what she says. If she makes you a promise, it's going to be up. And she will go to the ends of the earth to figure out how to get it done. I've seen this happen time after time with different cases that she's worked with, unsolved murders and cold cases and missing persons. And, you know, so many come to her. There's some unique ability that she has that enables her to look at something that maybe really, really well-trained people have looked at time after time and don't come to the same conclusion. She can look at it in like within 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely a gift. And
her ability
she can
to analyze a situation and to know
the right
steps to take. It is a very unique skill and talent. And like you say, not a lot of people, whether they be judges or attorneys or victim advocates, you know, she was that all rolled into one. She may not have held those degrees, but that's who she is as a person. And, you know,
well, and this is something that was not learned in the way that most people learn it. Okay. To become the so-called advocate the way that she did. I think she's so much more than what that word describes, but it was learning firsthand. It was sitting in courtrooms. It was meeting with attorneys. It was being with the victims in the trenches. And a lot of that's described in the book as to a lot of the cases that she took on were cases that the shelter systems or, you know, the organizations that are there to help domestic violence victims, they turned them away. They got them to a point, it was too high risk, they knew something bad was going to happen, so who do they call? You know, Susan gets it. We'll give it to Susan.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, by just the magic that she works in these cases, you know, she's been able to save every one of them. So it's amazing to read about those and just to see how this all comes together and how she has reached into those trenches, pulled these women out, is the same way that God has pulled her out of the darkness that she found herself in several different times during her life. And although she didn't understand it at the time, maybe, you know, how did she come through? there was no explanation for a lot of it. And I think readers will be amazed at some of the stories in the book like that. You just sit back and go, wait a minute, how can that be?
Yeah. How can that be, and how could she? And you come away with a sense, even if you're not a particularly religious person or spiritual person, she, as a very little girl, was making deals with God and questioning God and asking questions and trying to do whatever she could to look up to the heavens and say, help me, or where are you? I don't want to fail. I need to help myself. I need to help my mother. And I don't know of any little child, or even thinking of myself at that young age, where I was thinking in such broad terms. I mean, maybe I was thinking about what's the next new toy that mom and dad is going to buy me. I mean,
exactly.
It's so much more, Delilah, it's so much more abstract. And she, and again, there was the role reversal in that she took on the mother role of being the protector for her mother. And, it just is incredibly amazing.
Well, that's interesting that you bring that up, because that was something that when she first started some of the chapters in the book, we would talk on the phone because we had never met. And we would talk on the phone every day, and she's a night owl. She writes all night. And so every morning, of course, I get the phone call. Listen to this. So one of the chapters was talking about, at a very, very young age, she gets up on the chair and she dials the phone and calls for help. And the different ways that she found to help her mother escape different things, it just hit me right in the face. I said, you know what? This is what you do, and this is who you are. It's not something that you learned. It's not something that could ever be taught. But you have this instinct.
It's an innate ability, I think.
It's a gift. It's definitely a gift to be able to get out of the situations, even as a child, that she did. It definitely makes a believer. It strengthens your faith. It strengthens your belief in the power of what God can do in one person's life.
Yeah, the ultimate problem solver. I mean, I pride myself on being able to solve problems and having gotten to this point in life with a lot of adversity too. And I think we have to figure it out no matter what is going on in our lives. And I think this is the epitome of saying, she has climbed her own personal Mount Everest, and okay, yes, she got to the top, and now she's scaling a different mountain with her stage 4 cancer, and she's come to terms with that, and she's dealing with that on a day-to-day basis. And look at but again, another sort of revolving theme is, in all of that self-sacrifice, Delilah, the personal cost, everyone
mm-hmm.
deserves people that love them and cherish them,
mm-hmm.
Good marriages, children, good family ties. She tried at some of those things. Unfortunately, they weren't commensurate with the other things that were going on with her life. I mean, and that happens in a lot of people's lives. And we are alone, or we feel alone, but I really feel as if, like she just spoke to us in the last 2 years, things in terms of who really matters in your life, things come full circle, and you get to know that instinctually. And just because you're not biologically related does not mean that,
mm-hmm.
you have a very special connection. The two of you do, we all do, because we're close. And I think
one of the things is also, Donna, is the fact that, I mean, Susan's a great teacher, and
mm-hmm.
not only teaching the lessons of her life or teaching you how to go beyond who you are right now, or to get out of an abusive situation, or go beyond what you think you can do, sort of like get out of your own way, which is her favorite saying.
Great.
and it's her favorite phrase. It's holding my hand through hell is a teaching tool, in that it points out so many things that people are living through, whether it be a child being bullied, whether it be a child being abused, whether it be a child watching the abuse in their own family. That's their normal. They don't know any different. So by being able to read through this, to read through this book, people will learn certain things to look for, not just in their own family, but looking at their neighbor's family. There's certain things that you will see that are definite, that are definite red flags, and you'll see it all through this book. And I think in that respect, it's another textbook, so to speak, because a lot of the other books that Susan wrote are generally classified as self-help books, but they're
yeah,
more
how-to
textbooks. There's so much to learn, and there's so much to be taught out of those books, which, you know, through Document the Abuse, we'll be doing. And I think this book will fall right into that, in the sense that it can be used as a textbook. There's so many things to watch out for.
Yeah, and I think another advantage to that too is that although we're trying to, as best we can, in as many different ways with as many different professionals, introduce the EAA, we know that we're encountering some resistance through maybe things such as, you know, state governments and prosecutors questioning, well, you know, maybe this wouldn't be admissible or that. And while those things are being examined and trying to be researched, we have, as you say, we have this that is the real life journey, cannot be questioned. It is absolutely true, and you can still learn from this, whereas, you know, the EAA has its definite value, but if you introduce that and then somebody throws a barrier in your way because so-and-so legal system is not up to speed on it or doesn't believe in its use quite yet, or they're not ready for it, this book is a very, very good companion to that.
Oh, I agree. I definitely agree. And
right?
It's, you know, it just shows there again that you can't sit back and wait. You can't sit back and wait for everything to be lined up perfectly before you make a move. It doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Life doesn't work that way. You take the day you're in and you do what you do. You hope it turns out well. And that's where hope comes from. You hope that what you accomplish is recognized, and you hope that what you're doing is for the greater good. So there again, that's another common theme throughout the book that people
mm-hmm.
can learn, is that, you know, she never sat back and waited. She never waited for the right time to come along. It was, this was presented to me. This is what I have to do. This is what I'm going to do. And it's done.
Mm-hmm. And you move on to the next thing, whether it's right or wrong, you move on to the next thing.
Right,
right.
I mean,
and,
I think
yeah.
That's something that I have learned, is move forward. And Susan has always moved forward. She
right.
was never going to be stuck in ever called a victim. That's
right.
A word that she hates, is victim. And, you know, she made up her mind 20 years ago she was not going to be that victim. And she set out to change the world, and I think she's done it. So
I think so, definitely. There's no wallowing. There's no wallowing, whining in your pain
no.
here. It's just, it's a series of, it's a progression of, you know, taking a little girl and growing up to this adult person and dealing with adult issues, adult problems. And as she said, and this is another thing that I think we have a little over 20 minutes here. She talked about doing all these things, Delilah, on a shoestring. And what does that mean? You know, it was very, very unusual that she would ever get any compensation for many of the things that she did professionally. And how does a person accomplish
that? you find a way. I mean, you just find a way, whether it be the kindness of other people, you know, but this is, there again, this is something that set Susan apart years ago. You know, you have so many millions and millions of dollars being spent in the domestic violence research and research papers and all of the so-called shelter systems that you really, you know, you wouldn't want to send your dog to. So here you have someone out here that has a better mouse trap.
Mm-hmm.
Why, I guess the question I've had ever since the evidentiary abuse affidavit came out, and, you know, we've approached everybody and anybody that has anything to do with the domestic violence world, we have approached them. Why isn't it embraced? Why isn't it just taken in like, wow, this is the paperclip here, people?
Right.
So, but there again, that's a common theme through this book, is the fact that, okay, she took those cases that they didn't want. She saved those women that they didn't want to either take the time to do or didn't have the knowledge to do it or didn't have the resources to do it. You know, here we have agencies with government-funded money, grant money. There's money there. Where's it going? So you've got a one-man band that can get out there with no resources, no money, and get the job done. And I've seen it happen in 5 minutes. Believe it. I've seen her take a phone call, talk to a victim, say, bing, 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 bing. This is what you got to do. Talk to you later. Bye. So
has it down to a science, you know? And
absolutely.
I think it's just the nature of dealing with systems, whether it be the judicial system, governments, whether it be corporate, lack of corporate response. It's just, it's very, very hard to penetrate that, whether you're talking about fundraising, whether you're talking about creating an awareness here, just even to get people to listen. That is the key. And you know, Susan personally,
the thing is, so many of us get so frustrated. I know that's one thing that I get really guilty, I'm very guilty about. I get so frustrated that the anger boils over. But it's different when you see Susan act on things like that. It's, you don't see the frustration. It may be there, I don't know, but you don't see it. It's just, she'll find a way to get around it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a way. You just have to be smart enough to find it or tenacious enough. She's like a pit bull. She grabs onto it and away she goes.
Right.
But,
and it's inspiring too. And I just think that, you know, if we had to pick a few adjectives here, you know, you're talking about hope, you're talking about perseverance, you know, it's truly inspiring. I just think she has brought living to another level. And so all these other people that I interact with on a daily basis, and, you know, you go to work and somebody breaks their nail or the computer shuts down and they're whining. And I think to myself, and I have pictures of everyone in my cubicle that are important, including all of you. And I think, look at this woman. You dare to complain about you broke your nail, your whatever. And you try to explain and say, this is just, you know, this is just a totally different scenario, and you need to read this book. You need to become educated, and it's, you know, it's happening more and more. The stream of consciousness in that Susan is always, you know, banging the drum about this being an epidemic with respect to intimate partner relationships, instead of just using the old term domestic violence. That's another thing too, is that there are so many things that I think she coined or that she is in the forefront and that she has brought things down to the very essence of what the kernel of truth is and what things really are, and trying to get it out there in terms of what the real story is, and or not glossing.
Well, that's the problem
it.
with the whole issue that she recognized years ago, is that you peel away all the layers of the onion. You peel it all away, and there you have the truth. This is where it is. It's not hard to find. You just have to be, you just have to peel it. Period. There's no other choice. But each piece of it tells you something. Mm-hmm. Every piece that you take off tells you something. And when you get down to the middle of it, when you get down to where the truth lies, and you found it all.
Right.
And that's the evidence of the truth, is taking it all away. So everything that she's done, every case that she's worked on, every innovative thing that she's come up with, it's been done in truth.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And sometimes that's very difficult for people to handle. It's very difficult for people to handle exactly what's in front of them and be able to take that, mold it into something that's beneficial for everyone else, and then try to get it out there, get that message out there, get that tool out there, get people to notice that this is something that can be very effective. This can be very helpful to many, many people. I'm very happy to see a lot of the people who have come on board, because they're true believers. They're true believers in what she's done and what she's able to do. And some things you can train other people to do, but some things you really can't. That your instincts are there. Those are your God-given talents. Those are your intuition. All of that is what comes through, and you have to be open-minded to receive it. That's something, you know, a lot of people don't do, a lot of people don't understand, is how to open your mind, how to open your heart to receive exactly what the whole universe has in store for you, and how you can take what it gives you and spread it and give it to other people. And this is exactly what she's done. She has sucked in so much, but she's taken it in, turned it around, and given it back out. And this is the thing I want for people to understand, is, you know, there's so much of her love that has come out of this book. And by revealing the truth, by facing the truth, that it will help so many other people. It will save so many more lives.
It is true. And with truth comes true understanding. And, you know, I wanted to ask you, because you've been there for several years, with respect to the history of the radio shows that you've done with her and this incredible library of all of these cases and other guests that you've had, what would you want people to take from that? We have all of that material as well on archives. You've been part and parcel of that. What, you know, the shows have been stellar in terms of the quality and the tenacity that she used. You've been there with her in the trenches with those shows too, and you were like the dynamic duo. And I just wondered if you had a few comments with regard to that.
Well, it's been a ride. I mean, I was pulled into a world I never, ever, ever, ever looked to be in. I never, you know, never had any, I don't know. I don't understand it. I remember, you know, first meeting Susan online, and it was actually over the Stacey Peterson case. And I somehow or other came across her phone number, and I called her. And she answered the phone, which, first of all, you know, she was kind of a sort of celebrity to me. And so I was surprised that she answered the phone. She talked to me. She, you know, we talked several minutes. And then she had my number. And then she called me.
I was surprised when she called me, too.
Well, it's funny because as we talked, and, you know, a couple of months went by, I just finally said, I said, why are you calling me? Of all people, I mean, just little old me. I'm a little nobody. You know all these people, you know, to me who are very, you know, very well known. And I said, why are you calling me? And she's like, well, why not? I mean, that was just the pattern. That was it. We never had another conversation about it. Why not? And
I was meant
to be. So she was actually just right after that, we were involved in a different case. And then right after that, she became very ill. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, you know, don't know about the first illness. But, yeah, she was very ill. And there again, she got better. She pulled herself out of it and started writing the Time's Up book. And then I can't remember how it came up in discussion about holding my hand through hell. It was just kind of a phrase that she put out there. And one thing that I don't know, a lot of people may not know about Susan and the way she writes from a title. She always comes up with a title first, and then the book comes around it. So she's just like, that'd be a great title for a book, wouldn't it? And I'm like, yeah, it really would. And by that time, I had gotten to know her and knew a little more about the way she thinks and what she thinks about. And I said, you know, really and truly, that would be a great title for the book about your life.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you planted that seed.
Well, her immediate reaction to me was, nobody'd ever buy it. Who cares? Nobody cares. And I said, well, you know, I beg to differ. I said, you know, in a lot of these issues, I sort of am the average guy out there. I bring a lot of ignorance to the table. So people, I soak in what people have to teach me. And, you know, that was one of the things. I said, Susan, just in knowing you and seeing your work, and now learning who you are as a person, I said, it's very interesting to me. So I think so many other people out there who follow you and know what you do and follow your blog and see what you write about, I said, I think they might be interested to know the backstory, or, you know, where this all came from, where your fire, your passion, your risk.
So how much convincing did it take?
Well, it was, you know, the thing that I told her then, I said, you know, this is not a book that you're going to write overnight. I never believed it would be, and it wasn't. And it, although she tried, she was, like I say, she was writing the Times book at the same time she was started this. So she was had two books going. So, you know, she decided Time's Up was more important. Let's get this out. And really, with the evidentiary abuse affidavit in it, yeah, it was a good timing for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so she did. She wrote several chapters of Holding My Hand Through Hell. And like I said earlier, she would call and read them to me. And we'd go through, and every chapter, I was just more in awe. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. This really happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what readers will find as they're going through this. They're just going to go, really? This really happened to you? It's mm-hmm. it's hard to believe that
it
one
is.
Person can, you know, to go through the tragedies that she has, to see the things that she has in her life, and to come out the other side with the ability and the presence to be so much for so many other people. And
right.
That's kind of how the whole book came about.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and like I said, it took 3 years to write this book.
And with her other books, how long did it take for those?
I have no idea. Well, Time's Up came out really fast. I mean, she's usually a very quick writer.
Mm-hmm.
She can sit down and do blog posts in minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But Time's Up went pretty quickly, and we got it published pretty quickly. I didn't know her when the other books came out. Getting Our Lives was back in the 90s, and then came Moving Out, Moving On, and then Time's Up, and now Holding My Hand Through Hell.
Right. Well, you know, it just seems to tie everything perfectly well. And if she has the inclination, if she had the strength, I know that she had talked about, well, maybe there's one more book in my future. We don't know that that's the case, and we know what the topic would be, and that would be a very interesting journey as well. But I think if this is the final book, it is, like I say, awe-inspiring. It is very positive, despite the negative elements in there, because it has that sense of constantly moving on from one challenge to the next to the next. Mm-hmm. And I think
Susan said it very well when she called in. We don't know the outcome. We don't know the outcome of this book. We don't know the outcome of her life. We don't know the outcome of our lives. So we live with the hope, with what we're dealt, and we make the best of it. And, you know, we hold our hand up and hope that God's holding on to it. We know he is. And this is just a testament. Her book, Holding My Hand Through Hell, is a testament to God's power and how he can bring you through and overcome the obstacles that you think. It's those little pebbles in the path, but one pebble at a time, and you're at the mountaintop.
Yes, that is for sure. Can you tell us, we have about maybe just under three and a half minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
Could we perhaps go through what the schedule is going to be with the virtual tour continuing this month?
Yeah, that was one thing. The publisher and I got together and tried to brainstorm some ideas. And because, it's very different and difficult to present book and do book signings and presentations and things that you don't normally would do with an author. So we came up with the idea of a virtual book tour, which has been... It's been done before. It's not a new idea. But we contacted several people that we knew wrote blogs on a consistent basis. And we started, the whole thing started, and the book launched on Thursday on the radio with Jillian Moss-Backman, one of Susan's dear friends, and also the author of Beyond the Pews. And she was very, very lucky to be at the Heartland Fall Forum, which is a big conference for books to be presented to independent booksellers. So it's really a big deal to be there. And also
very good timing then, right? Yeah.
Very good timing. So she did the radio show with Steve Semkin, who's Ice Cube Press, the publisher of Holding My Hand Through Hell. And then on Friday... Diane Fanning wrote her review of the book, and Diane also wrote the foreword to the book.
Yeah.
So that was gone in this show. So just kind of going through the month, we're hitting several different blogs and websites we're scheduled all the way through November 5th. So people go to the website, imaginepublicity.com, and follow the schedule. Hit those blogs and get the book.
Yeah, I have it in front of me. We have Heidi Hyatt, Pastor Neil Shorey, Anita Sullivan, Sandra L. Brown, Peter Hyatt, Gail Crabtree, Dennis Griffin, Justice Cafe. I'm not entirely familiar with that. Danielle Pierre. Paula, how do you say her name?
Castillo.
Huh?
Paula Carrasquillo.
Carrasquillo, okay. Mm-hmm. Pamela Chapman, who is a Times Up writer. Dr. Lori Roth, Annie Jacoby, Amy Elk, Dr. Scott Vaughn, Cynthia Akaran, myself, and then winding up, it says, with True Crime author Kathy Scott. So many, many people. And it looks like we very shortly are coming to the close of this episode. And Delilah, I have to say this has been so special because of the fact that we're of this topic and that Susan joined us and that this will be on the archives. Thank you so much for making
it available. Around the book, and I think it's doing quite well, and we're very happy for that. We're looking for big things.
Yes, we are, and upward and onward. And so everyone, please do go to imaginepublicity.com so you can see what is next on the schedule. And please do tune in next week to Shattered Lives. It promises to be another very interesting show. Thank you so much, everyone around the nation, and please do join me again. Thank you, Delilah. We'll see
you
next week.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.